Hello, and welcome to Words of Wisdom, a podcast dedicated to reflecting on the wisdom of the Book of Proverbs. Your host is Dr. Jerry Weirwool, who will share life-giving truth from Proverbs that will help us become wise and discerning. Wisdom is a journey, and we hope you will join us for this exciting adventure.
Proverbs 17:15 says, "The one who declares the wicked to be righteous, and the one who condemns the righteous, indeed, both of them alike are an abomination to Yahweh." Here in this proverb, we see a form of synthetic parallelism, where the first two lines together are connected to the third line, and all three lines are necessary for the entire thought to be properly expressed. The third line ties together the moral implications surrounding the person who declares the wicked to be righteous and who condemns the righteous. Such declarations are described as being an abomination to Yahweh. The main point of the proverb is concerned with justice. Justice can be defined as upholding and administering what is right, especially by the impartial judgment for assignment of merited rewards or punishments. In other words, it means to be fair and to deliver what is properly owed to an individual, whether they are awarded or punished. A more succinct way to say it is that justice is when people get what they deserve, either something good or bad. The imagery or implicit context that is lying behind the proverb can be viewed from more than one perspective. First, the proverb could be dealing with a courtroom setting, where the imagery is of someone who is on trial in a legal case before a judge. In this scenario, the one who is declaring the wicked to be righteous and condemning the righteous is the judge who is giving the ruling or verdict. In nearly every civilization and society, there have been matters of dispute between individuals or with respect to the civil laws of the land that need someone to decide the issue and what course of action should be taken. This individual is referred to as a judge. In ancient times, before the institution of civil law within formalized national governments, matters within tribes and people groups typically were decided by elders or patriarchs of families. But with the establishment of nations and rulers in the world, individuals or committees were formed to handle domestic issues among the people and to enforce the laws of the nation. We see this in nearly every established nation throughout history. For example, in biblical times, after God delivered his people Israel from Egypt, formed them into a nation, and gave his law to them at Mount Sinai, Moses, who was their leader appointed by God, presided as judge over them. In describing Moses' position as judge of Israel, Exodus chapter 18, verses 13 through 16 says, "It came to pass on the next day that Moses sat to judge the people, and the people stood around Moses from the morning to the evening. When Moses' father-in-law saw all that he did for the people, he said, 'What is this thing that you do for the people? Why do you sit alone, and all the people stand around you from morning to evening?' Moses said to his father-in-law, 'Because the people come to me to inquire of God. When they have a matter, they come to me, and I judge between one person and another, and I make known to them the statutes of God and his laws.'" It was Moses' job as judge to make a pronouncement over disputes among the people according to the statutes and laws of God. The judge's responsibility is to make a ruling on a matter. Perhaps it's to decide if someone has done something wrong, like committed a crime, or to resolve a disagreement or conflict, or to mandate that someone receive what is due to them, for example, income or land or inheritance. Deuteronomy chapter 25, verse 1 gives a summary of the purpose for having a judge. When people have a dispute, it says, they are to take it to court and the judges will decide the case, acquitting the innocent and condemning the guilty. That's the role that a judge plays. They are to acquit the innocent and to condemn the guilty. Now, the other perspective for the underlying context or imagery of the proverb is that it could also be universally addressing all people in broad moral terms, where a person's character and behavior are in view and the respective judgment of those actions. In this more general outlook on the context and imagery of the proverb, it deals with the principle of justice being exercised by everyone in their own lives. When we think of someone's actions as being right or wrong, in a sense, we are judging those actions. Now, to be clear, I'm talking about assessing the moral value involved in a particular action, not about being judgmental. Being judgmental is when you exhibit an excessively critical point of view that tends to look down on others. Well, that's not what the proverb is talking about. The concern that the proverb is putting forth is about having a certain perspective regarding right and wrong, and that when those two are mixed up in one's judgment, it is an injustice and an abomination to Yahweh. Perhaps the warning of the prophet Isaiah says it best. In Isaiah chapter 5, verse 20, the prophet warns about reversing one's view of right and wrong. It says, "Woe to those who call evil good, and good evil, who put darkness for light, and light for darkness, who put bitter for sweet, and sweet for bitter." The problem is when what is wrong is labeled as being something that is right, and then what is right is labeled as being wrong. Now, someone might say, only a criminal would call something that is known to be wrong as being right and vice versa. Well, it's not as cut and dry as that. It is not just people who break the law and do other bad things who would be in this category of mixing up right and wrong. For example, there is a lot of conflict over deciphering what is morally right and wrong in our society by good-willed, honest people. Morality is not something that is universally agreed upon by all people, not even by all Christian believers either. The need to have a right outlook on morality is expressed elsewhere in Proverbs. In chapter 24, verses 23 through 25, where it says, "These proverbs also are for the wise. To show partiality in judgment is not good. The one who says to the wicked person, 'You are righteous,' people will curse him. A nation will be indignant with him. But for those who offer rebuke, it will go well, and upon them will come a good blessing." When it says to show partiality in judgment, it means showing favoritism when deciding what is morally right and wrong. It is adapting morality to fit your own ideals and prejudices by determining who you think should receive judgment and who you think should be exempt. True justice doesn't pick and choose who should be subject to moral standards. If someone has done something immoral, then it is wrong, and justice calls for punishment, regardless who they are. Now, punishment might entail some form of restitution for the wrongdoing, or perhaps it calls for remediation, or it could entail the loss of various privileges, access, or influence, or more severe forms might involve termination of employment, fines, or prison. To call a person who has done something immoral as righteous means to declare them innocent, that is, they are in the right. And it is a complete perversion of justice. If someone is a wicked person, that means they've done wrong in the sight of Yahweh. They are an unrighteous person who does not obey Yahweh and his law. It is important to note that people will curse the one who perverts justice, and a nation will be indignant with him. Why will people be so upset if someone shows partiality in their judgment? First, a lack of judgment will have a devastating effect on a society. It will disrupt peace and destabilize all economic and social order. In addition, people will begin to take matters into their own hands, which usually results in increased violence and further injustice. Second, I also believe that the reason people will curse someone who shows favoritism in judgment is because Yahweh originally ordered the world and designed humankind according to his image. Therefore, we all inherently desire fairness and equality, that is, justice. Even a child recognizes that something is wrong when their toy is abruptly stolen from them. But we can't stretch that analogy too far, because a child has no conscious understanding of whether an action is morally right or wrong. But the point remains that Yahweh has woven into the very fabric of our being a desire for justice. In Proverbs 24, verse 25, it says, "If a person offers rebuke, then the result is that it will go well and they will receive a good blessing. Now, who is it going to go well for? Is it the wicked person or the one who rebukes the wicked person? According to the parallelism with verse 24, the subject under consideration is the one who makes the pronouncement over the wicked person. Therefore, if a person rebukes a wicked person on account of their effort to render justice, they will be rewarded by Yahweh with pleasant things and a good blessing. Thus, the one who upholds justice and reproves the wicked for their evil ways will be blessed by Yahweh, where the blessing could be health, success, good reputation, and other things. In order to illustrate these proverbs, I want to talk about justice and the American judicial system. No judicial system in the world is perfect. What that means is that sometimes the innocent get convicted and the criminals go free. Prior to the development of forensic science in the mid-19th century, most judicial systems operated primarily on the basis of eyewitness testimony. This was certainly the case in ancient Israel, as Deuteronomy chapter 19, verse 15 points out, quote, "One witness is not enough to convict anyone accused of any crime or offense they may have committed. A matter must be established by the testimony of two or three witnesses," end quote. But with the advent of forensic science, other evidence besides eyewitness testimony is able to be collected and analyzed in order to determine who committed a crime. Foot and fingerprint analysis have provided enormous insights into identifying the culprit of a crime, but probably nothing has been more impactful in helping bring about justice than DNA testing. In 1999, California resident Horace Roberts was convicted of a second-degree murder and was sentenced to 15 years to life in prison. Roberts was found guilty of murdering his girlfriend and co-worker, Terry Cheek. Cheek was in the midst of a divorce with her husband, and the circumstances had risen to new heights, with a restraining order filed against her by her husband, requesting the prohibition of any visitation rights for her with her two daughters. While waiting one afternoon for Cheek to pick him up with his truck for work, Roberts found himself waiting the rest of the day, as Cheek never showed. A few days later, Cheek's body was found on a deserted stretch of Interstate 15 near Lake Corona, California. The autopsy showed that she had been strangled to death. A watch that was believed to belong to Roberts was found at the scene of the crime, and along with his initial denial of any involvement with Cheek, Roberts was the prime suspect and was convicted of the crime by the California courts in the trial the following year. After spending 4 years in prison and having several appeals denied for additional court hearings, Roberts learned about the California Innocence Project, an organization dedicated to working to free individuals who were wrongfully convicted of crimes. After filling out the 75-page questionnaire to have his case reviewed, the organization accepted his application and decided to look into his case. Over the next 10 years, using more advanced lab techniques, the California Innocence Project had the watch and some rope that was found at the scene of the crime tested, as well as some debris that was found under Cheek's fingernails. The results turned up a DNA profile for an unidentified man and Cheek's stepson, who was 19 years old at the time of the murder. Unfortunately, the DNA of the unidentified man was not sufficient to upload to the FBI's Combined DNA Index system called CODIS. And so in 2017, the California Innocence Project successfully petitioned to have all of Cheek's clothes be tested for DNA. The tests returned enough DNA to upload to the CODIS database to match it to a man named Joaquin Leal, who turned out to be the nephew of Cheek's husband. And so, excitingly, in October of 2018, Roberts was exonerated from the crime and released from prison. Being wrongfully incarcerated for so long, Roberts was eligible for state compensation of $140 each day in prison, which, when accumulated over 20 years, adds up to over $1 million. Since 1989, when Gary Dotson was the first to be exonerated of a crime using DNA testing, several hundred cases have been overturned by showing that the individual convicted of the crime was actually innocent. If time allowed, I could share the stories of Gary Dotson, David Allen Jones, Ricky Davis, and so many more. A national organization called the Innocence Project, comprised of dozens of attorneys, specialists, and case analysts who are all passionate about seeing justice prevail in the American judicial system, have worked tirelessly using advanced methods in DNA testing and forensic science to appeal court cases for individuals who have been wrongfully convicted of crimes. Their efforts, along with other organizations with like passion to see justice come to pass, have enabled over 375 people to be exonerated of crimes they did not commit. According to statistics by the Innocent Project in 2020, the average number of years served by wrongly convicted individuals is 14. The total number of cumulative years wrongfully served is 5,284. The average age at the time of exoneration is 43 years, and 21 people were serving time on death row. Though these statistics may not seem that significant to some people, but for those couple hundred people who were subjected to such injustice in their life, these numbers are incredible, especially when 69% of the cases involved misidentification by eyewitnesses. No matter what the reason was, condemning an innocent person for a crime they didn't commit is an awful thing. And worse yet, if it was done intentionally by an eyewitness or by the improper handling or skewing of the evidence in a case. Yahweh cares about justice, and he wants us to care about it too. Proverbs 17 verse 15 tells us that declaring the wicked to be righteous or condemning the righteous, both of them alike are an abomination to Yahweh. But we don't have to be in a profession that deals with civil law or the judicial system in order to care about justice. We encounter issues regarding justice nearly every day in our lives. Take, for instance, if you're walking down the sidewalk and someone bumps into you, you would expect them to apologize. Or if you are in line at the grocery store and someone cuts in front of you, you would expect them to apologize. Or if someone calls you a name or says something untrue about you at work or to your classmates, you would expect them to apologize. Why would we expect people to apologize for these behaviors? Because we think that they have done something wrong and that justice demands that they are either punished or perform some sort of restitution to make things right and make amends for their wrongdoing. But probably worse yet is when we hear of people that try to justify their sinful behavior as though it is okay and not really all that wrong. We may not think of these sorts of behaviors as an injustice, but in God's eyes, if it's wrong, then it's wrong. And to say that it is all right to do wrong is the same as calling the wicked person righteous. Slandering is just as wrong as cheating, which is just as wrong as stealing, which is just as wrong as lying, which is just as wrong as lusting. If we are to care about justice as much as Yahweh does, then we must care about the big ways and small ways that justice plays out in life. If we wrong someone, or if we sin against God, we must recognize the injustice that we have done. With God, we repent and ask for forgiveness, knowing that He is faithful to forgive us. With other people, we must apologize and ask for forgiveness, and how we can repair the damage and hurt we have caused. To care about justice is to care about submitting to the will of Yahweh, recognizing that we have an obligation to live according to His law and His standards of what is right and wrong. But justice is also about caring for the well-being of other people, knowing that if we have wronged them, then we have committed an injustice against them. Or if they have been wrongfully accused and condemned, then they are being subjected to injustice. And it is not okay. In conclusion, as we live with the fear of Yahweh, We must acknowledge that every injustice is an abomination to Him, and that we are to seek to establish justice in all that we say and do. This is the wisdom of the proverb.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Words of Wisdom podcast. If you enjoyed this episode, we would be so appreciative if you would share this podcast with your friends. And if you have been blessed by this work, please consider supporting the podcast by clicking on the donation link in the description.